I listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
The very essence of the civil rights movement was an appeal, was its appeal to the conscience of those who beat us with batons, attacked us with dogs, and stood defiantly at the schoolhouse door. We wanted our enemies to know that every blow they struck was a blow against another human being. The bloodshed that resulted was the blood of all humanity. When I met George Wallace, I had to forgive him, because to do otherwise, to hate him, would only perpetuate the evil system we sought to destroy. George Wallace should be remembered for his capacity to change, and we are better as a nation because of our capacity to forgive and to acknowledge that our political leaders are human and largely a reflection of the social currents in the river of history. Whether at the bridge in Selma, at a bombed church in Birmingham, or on the schoolhouse steps, George Wallace and I were thrust together by fate, by our personal conviction and principle, and by what I like to call the spirit of history. The civil rights movement achieved its goals in the person of Mr. Wallace because he grew to see that we as human beings are joined by a common bond. I can never forget what George Wallace said and did as governor, as a national leader, and as a political opportunist. But our ability to forgive serves a higher moral purpose in our society. Through genuine repentance and forgiveness, the soul of our nation is redeemed. George Wallace deserves to be remembered for his effort to redeem his soul, and in so doing, to mend the fabric of American society. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. I'm your host, Rod, joined as always by my co-host,
Karen.
And we're live on what appears to be a Saturday night.
Yes, sir.
Live on Saturday night. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Search the Black Guy Who Tips. We are going to be doing feedback today. That means we'll be talking about the things you had to say about our show throughout the week, whether that be emails you wrote, voicemails you left us at 704-557-0186. That's 704-557-0186. Or is it 187? What am I saying? Am I saying the right thing? Mm-hmm. I hope I'm saying the right thing.
Listen, you know I don't know the phone number. Oh, God.
What am I doing? Well, yeah, I said it right. 86. I don't know why I wanted to say 187 on a motherfucking cop. You can also do stuff like leave comments on our website, theblackguywhotips.com. Leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. We're going to read those today. We got quite a few, and we appreciate everybody that takes time out to leave those. The official weapon of the show is
the taser,
and an unofficial sport,
bullet ball,
and bullet ball extreme. And today's excerpt is not actually from a book. It's from the New York Times op-ed, and it was written by John Lewis in 1998, September 16th, 1998. John Lewis, civil rights icon, hero, you know, he died today, he passed today. I know last week everybody was saying
Twitter killed him last week.
Yeah, but it was actually today that he passed, and you know, or last night, I believe, but rest in peace to a giant, among men and women and people of all backgrounds, faiths, colors, all that stuff. Somebody that really walked the walk and truly did believe it, and, a much better man than pretty much most of us are ever going to hope to be.
Come on.
Period. And I just wanted to bring up that part because a lot of the stuff that people say they want, I think there's a lot of stuff right now that's easy. And I think one of the things that's always easy for people to reach for in times of distress is vengeance, you know?
Yes.
It's something we all, it's a human emotion we all relate to, and we all can feel it. And, you know, we've all been there before. Mm-hmm. And I think the hardest fucking thing is hard to forgive people, to
yes,
move on. And I, you know, and too often people trivialize forgiveness as some weak shit, as something that people do to protect white people, protect whiteness. But it's not. It's really about protecting your soul. And I believe also it's about saving someone else's soul because of what they did, you know? So to see John Lewis talk about, and John Lewis wasn't no like soft ass, like, you ain't gotta do nothing, I'm just trying to, like, he was on some like, listen, if you do the work, if you show repentance, if you do that, then I'm willing to then move on.
Right.
You know, this is not, he didn't attend Trump's inauguration. Like, this isn't some dude that just throws these platitudes out here or whatever, or says shit and doesn't live by it, or tries to throw forgiveness out there as some like catch all that you can just, oh, why can't we just forgive everything? Like, no, it was very much a like, if you make a concerted effort, because that's really what civil rights movement was. Mm-hmm. It was pushing people to make that concerted effort to say, this is staining your soul more than mine. So what are you going to do to move beyond this? And, you know, different times for different folks. I think now we're more in an age of like kind of hate and bitterness and like we, I think there's this idea that, well, we haven't tried hate before, which we have, but that like, if we're violent to them, if we're dismissive to them, if we're mean to them, then that will win the war. And look, maybe it will, maybe I don't, you know, maybe John Lewis doesn't know what he's talking about, but I feel like there's some consideration and wisdom in the words of a man that people want to throw out there like a Pokemon mascot today, you know, and cherry pick what he stood for. But there's some words of wisdom in this person, because all his radicalness, all of his getting arrested, all of his being abused, all of his standing up, all of his boycotts, all of that good trouble he did, all of that still came from a place of radical love for himself, his fellow man, woman, every, you know, fellow people, and even for the people that tormented him. And I think that just gets lost in the equation. And you know it's an easy sentiment to dismiss, but I think people are misguided when they dismiss it so out of hand. It should be considered, because ultimately there will be no reconciliation. There will be no truth. There will be no justice if we don't have the capacity to forgive at some point. You can't reset things without that. And I think that's a very important lesson. That's what I'm going to take from his life.
No, you can't. And, you know, because a lot of people have been hurt, a lot of people have been damaged by their past, a lot of people have been let down, that's why you have a lot of these adults with so much anger. You do me, fuck you forever. You cross me, fuck you forever, fuck you forever. And you like, okay, you say that. Let's go back down memory lane in your life. Have you ever disappointed your parents, your grandparents? Have you ever disappointed your uncles? Have you ever disappointed your children, your spouse? Is there somebody where you have done an action to disappoint them and they at some period of time had to go through the route of forgiveness? But that was your kids. It don't matter. Did they forgive you is the question. Because the thing is, people act like you do something to them and you're just supposed to write people off forever. But everybody under the sound of my voice at some period of time, somebody somewhere had to ask you for forgiveness. And the thing is, a lot of people want to pick and choose when they do that, like they've never committed a wrong crime, like they've never made a flaw, said the wrong thing, you know, like they've never crossed somebody that they didn't mean to cross or did something. Never. Like, you were just born absolutely positively perfect, and there's nothing that you ever did in your life that required some form of forgiveness from somebody in your life. And for me, I think as you become an adult, life will harden your heart. That's what a lot of people like. Life will actually harden your heart. Mm-hmm. And you have got to learn that, in my opinion, if you choose not to forgive, cool. But for a lot of people, they say that, but you can tell that it bothers them and it weighs them down and it hurts them and it prevents them from relationships and it breaks bonds and it does all this damage, because you are allowing this hurt and pain to wreck your soul. You are allowing it to tear you apart, and you can't forgive and you can't forget, and it's a replay in your mind, and it's a very torturous place to be. And a lot of people will never admit that they're struggling with this. It's easier for you to say, well, then fuck them. and cut them off and nip it at the bud, because you quote unquote protecting yourself. And I understand that, but part of life is love and loss and being disappointed, and part of life is also being hurt. Like that's also part of life and living. And my thing is, if you don't hurt, not trying to find it, you're actually not living. And that's very hard to get people to understand that, because the thing is, forgiveness works for everybody. And particularly here in America, particularly with slavery and all that stuff, in order for us to move past that, it's a lot of forgiving. White people need to forgive themselves, and black people need to forgive white people. That's very hard to do, because you're requiring a lot when you go back and you look at the history and the past and the hurts and the wrongs.
And don't be lost in that. There has to be repentance. There has to be a change. There has to be work. It's not forgiveness for forgiveness sake.
No, I'm not saying that.
You know, I think that's what people get lost in, is this idea of like, yeah, and then we move on. It's like, no, when someone's willing to move on, are you going to meet them there? You know, because if not, then what's the point of the movement?
Right.
If the whole movement is just to turn it into some type of, like, I don't know, punishment of white people, some type of, like, for lack of a better term, cucking of whiteness. Like, you know, it's like people can't, it's like they want to replace the white people at the top with their own dogma. And I think, to see past that is so rare, to see people. And John Lewis saw past that. Like, nah, it's not about us dictating down to white people, like, and now we the new leaders. Like, no, that's not what the fuck we want, you know? Like, it's about mitigating harm. It's about coming together and putting yourself on the line for other people, because it's not like this was his only cause. Like, mm-mm. John Lewis was a Democrat through and through for many causes. You know, the other thing too is what I always think about when I think about the civil rights movement, of like the peaceful protesters, quote unquote, because, you know, the violence was still done to them. And as much people have disdain for those peaceful protests, it's so weird, because what do you think these quote unquote uprisings were? Like, the vast majority of these uprisings were people peacefully protesting and the police beating them up and shit, mm-hmm. and getting caught on camera.
Yeah.
That is from the civil rights era.
Yes.
And to have people, like, spit in the face of the civil rights era, to have people, you know, I remember people were talking bad about John Lewis when he essentially said he wasn't friends with Bernie. Like, me and Bernie, like, I don't know him in the way that, you know, like, he ain't really one of the crew. Mm-mm. And people got mad at him, as if, like, oh, but Hillary Clinton is, like, well, Hillary Clinton is around and within, works with the CBC more often and all that shit. So, yes, me and Hillary Clinton are cool.
Yeah, I know her face. I know her people.
Right. Me and Bernie are coworkers. And people got very upset with that man over that. And I was like, you know, y'all, how fucking dare y'all? You know? Like... You march with King. Nobody marched with King more than John Lewis. So what are we doing? You know, that was really the start of my, like, oh, I'm not even fucking with these Bernie people. Mm-hmm. Like on no level do I want to be around them, because I saw the jig at that moment. But the thing that I really respect about him is that he saw strength in how much the capacity to withstand, he saw that as strength. And I think now people are moving towards the capacity to do damage, the capacity to destroy, to inflict harm. That's what we see as strength now. And I'm not saying it never was like that for anybody, but it seems like the mainstream thing now is, you know, real resistance is violence, real resistance is destruction, and if you're not on board with that, or if you're if that's not your go-to, you're somehow weaker, you know? And I think violence inflicts a stain on your soul, just like the people that did it to us. And I think when we do it to other people, it does that. And I think the world that we live in, this country, wants to turn us into violent animals so they can justify what they do to us already.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what they exist in. And some people accept it and they go, I'm gonna become that to show y'all that this what y'all did to me, and I'm gonna show y'all how violent I can be, then fuck y'all. And I understand that mentality, but, you know, I try to fight against it, because I don't want to let them determine the outcome for me, you know.
Yeah, and also people don't look at this, but there is strength in forgiveness. Not trying to find it, it's real easy to throw up a wall and go fuck you and walk away.
There's more strength in forgiveness than this other shit,
right?
And people don't want to hear that shit,
right? There is a lot of strength,
but think about how rare forgiveness is,
right?
If I'm making it up,
it requires more of you, and people don't want to be better.
The easy thing is always to hit back. That's why motherfuckers worship Jesus, because he was turned the other cheek, and nobody else can do that. You know what I mean? Like, there's a reason to it. You know, it's hard. It is fucking hard. You know, just on a social level, there's been people that have said and done shit where back in the day I would have reflexively snapped back at their ass, been on the show talking shit about them, you know, dragging them through the mud and all that shit. And when I decided to stop that, to not do that anymore, it was like difficult. You know, we've had long conversations. I'm like, just let me fucking talk about this person. Mm-hmm. And you know, and it took a lot to not do it, but ultimately I felt like that was for the best, because if I would have told any stranger on the street, if I would have asked 99% of our listeners, they would have said they wanted to hear it just to hear it as entertainment,
right?
But they wouldn't have gave a fuck about how it would have made me feel later. Mm-hmm. But you and Justin and Bossy and Nick Jew and all these people, y'all know me more than a host of a podcast,
right?
So y'all know that, well, at some point you're not gonna feel so good about this. At some point you're gonna wish you would have just, you know, moved the fuck on, or you're gonna wish that you had been the bigger person, because you don't really take a lot of pride in being teen petty, all this shit. Mm-mm. And you know, it's been an adjustment. I'm not always gonna be able to reach it, obviously. Right. You know, it's a very high-minded virtue that I think is so difficult to reach. Is very, mm-hmm. you know, like everyone got their limits. But to think of a man like this who faced down George Wallace, so we don't get to play, we don't get to claim some sort of oppression Olympics over John Lewis. We like the most you can say is, well, I'm just not as good a man as John Lewis. That's the most you can say, because you really can't say I'm a better person than him. You can only be like, yeah, I just don't have that in me, because and that's okay to admit. But that's why the fuck is. That's why the fuck he was a titan. That's why he was a hero, is because he did have that in him, when in a world where nobody has that. Everyone encourages the small act now. Everyone encourages the reflexive clap back. Everyone encourages that now. No one says, dog, it ain't even worth it, walk away, it's not, you know, no one does that anymore.
Well, if you do, it's rare that you do that. And you know, when I say, we'll talk about forgiveness before, I'm not saying anything that I haven't been through. I have forgave, yeah. And I have been forgiven. Mm-hmm. So I've been on both sides of this, and I've also forgiven myself, which is a different type of forgiveness.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, it's one of these things where it's very different, because it's something that you have to wrestle with. It's a quote-unquote internal battle with yourself. And I think the hardest forgiveness is the forgiveness of yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, it for you to be forgiven and for you to ask forgiveness, that's different than you actually forgiving yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, because the thing about it, you feel accountable and responsible for your actions.
People that don't forgive other people don't forget themselves.
Correct.
And you can tell. That's why they're so bitter inside. Like, if you have a hard time forgiving other people, you got a hard time forgiving yourself. Unless you're some type of fucking narcissist, which is a whole nother story.
Right.
But if you're a person, look deeper at those people that tell you they don't forgive, and look at how they feel about themselves.
Look at their actions. Look how they treat people. Yeah. Look at their relationships. How long are their relationships? Do they have any relationship that lasts more than 3 to 5 years? Do people like being around them? See how they interact with people on social media. And in your real life, look at people around you. They're like, I don't forgive. Look at their life. Are they happy?
Right.
Do they seem fulfilled? Are they mad and bitter and angry? Like signs around them will let you know if they are at a place where, because like a lot of times people will go, I'm petty. I don't forgive. But look around them, and if you paid attention, I think people say this and people don't pay attention to what's around them. Pay attention to the company they keep. Pay attention to that shit, and it will let you know if they are actually walking the walk and talking the talk, and they just mad to be mad, and that's it. But normally it doesn't work like that. Normally, if you are a team, I don't forgive nothing, never, nobody. It's a deeper issue that actually needs to be resolved.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it happens immediately, but mm-mm. It just takes time. But I think that the fact that we create so many communities formed around grudges, gripes, and the capacity to just to inflict damage on people, harass people and shit, I think that has just put people in a much more a much harder space to hear that. Like, it used to be a time where everyone was going to church once a week and you were getting that lesson of like, and you gotta forgive, you gotta turn the other cheek, you know, where there was a little bit more community, you know, where it was physical community, so you didn't really have the ability to say, I'm only gonna sit on this side of the table with everyone whose opinions agree with me. You know, when you're physically with somebody and you can't cherry pick what you said, you can't choose to selectively like share this, that, and the other, like, they kind of get to see the crust of you. So you have that friend that says something and you go, hey man, that's messed up, that's you shouldn't have said that, and then, oh my bad. And it could be something that tiny that we don't have anymore, you know. People fuck up and now it's like, I'm screenshot, got this shit forever, you know. So it's like this type of environment, I think, can be counterproductive to the capacity to forgive. And the fact that people see two things as weakness tells a lot about, I feel like, and I think this is where people always lose connection with me, and, you know, call it the empath, call it being a Libra, but I feel like the real revolution is apologizing and forgiveness, because those are the two things people tell you are what make you weak. And to me, those are the two things that only the strongest people can do.
Yes, sir.
You know, I look at it as a strength, because I know there are people that I still haven't forgiven in my life where I'm like, nah, fuck them, you know. But that's, to me, it's a goal to be like, to one day be able to say,
right, one day,
even if they never apologize, to forgive them in the capacity that they're human.
Mm-hmm.
They made a mistake, they fucked up, or whatever, and I let me move on from it. It's not even for them necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's for me to mm-hmm. move on. And I've done that before, you know, and it's just a goal. So I think that's the part that gets lost in all this shit, is that in a world that sees forgiveness as weakness, John Lewis was the strongest among us. And anyone that can't see that, fuck them. Real talk. Like, if anyone that can't see that, man, you don't know, you don't realize you got the game backwards. You know, the ability to move on, to not become stuck and fixated on this point or this, like, this get back. Because if anybody had any right to be like, I'm on get back, John Lewis had the right to be like that. You know, and I'm not gonna, and unless you're willing to say he's not a hero, he's some type of weak ass nigga or something, then you have to admit the reason we lionize this dude, the reason people look up to him, is because of that capacity to forgive, and because there is a virtue in it that we must acknowledge exists. Because we, as long if we forget that, I feel like then everything was pointless. I think everyone talks about white supremacy as capitalism. They talk about the racism. They talk about all these like bigger societal terms and stuff, but just emotionally I feel like white supremacy is really trying to turn and take and mold us into the monsters that they said we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and at least for me personally, I refuse. Like, that is a revolution, that is fighting back, that is radical, is to love somebody. You know, that's why I make jokes about it, but that's why that prison abolition shit, I'm closer to that than I am to, you know, lock them all up, you know what I'm saying? Because on some level, I understand what they're trying to get to is this idea of, you trespass, but you're still a human being. And then that, I believe you're salvageable. I believe you can
right.
be, you know, you can be molded or supported in areas that would reduce the likelihood for you to commit crime. That is what they essentially yes. are saying. Most people don't look at it, you know. I laugh at the people that just welded over you like a moral high horse, but in its practice, it's forgiveness. And people talk a good game, but ain't nobody into that. Mm-hmm. You know, all right.
Butterfly in the sky, I can go twice as high. Take a look, It's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere. Friends to know and ways to grow. A reading rainbow. I can be anything. Take a look. It's in a book. A reading rainbow. A reading rainbow.
All right. We did have people that gave us money on this good Saturday night. Let's give them a shout out.
I dedicate this song to recession, depression, and unemployment. This song's for you.
Today's a new day. That's right. New day, new salary. Let's talk about who sent us this money. Our boy Chris from Hawaii. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Triangle Wine Co. Shout out to Triangle Wine Co. Mm-hmm. Getting us through this this Rona apocalypse with that delicious, delicious alcohol. Okay.
Yes, sir.
We need it. Calfani G. April G. No relation. Corey the Tickler. Tabitha M. Brianna F. Alexis H. Alexis H. Thank you very much. Tanya S. Wonga from Down Under. Dana W. Samuel H. Jr. Virginia G. Jesse J. Rebecca M. Tiffany B. Jane M. Shirley Huang Esquire. Please make sure you say the Esquire.
You better.
Virginia P. Lindsay B. Alfonso M. Jeff F. Palmetto Stone Magic. Simone C. became a brand new recurring donator, if I'm not mistaken.
Hey, baby.
Thank you very much, Simone. See, thank you everybody who donated. We appreciate all of you. And, yeah, thanks for supporting the show.
But well, there is no sunshine. Nothing but clouds, and it's dark in my heart, and it feels like a cold night.
It ain't easy, bud.
Today's a new day. So tell me, where are my blue skies?
Where is that love, y'all?
Where is the love and the joy that you promised me? Tell me it's alright.
The truth is,
I almost gave up, but my power that I can't explain.
Holy Ghost power, y'all.
Fell from heaven like a shower, and
now I know we've been hurt, y'all, but still,
I smile.
Come on.
Even though it hurts me, I smile.
Yeah, I feel that.
I know God is working, so I smile. Even though I've been here for a while, I smile.
Hallelujah.
Smile. It's so hard to look up when you look down. I sure would hate to see you give up now. You look so much better when you smile.
All right, let's get into the people that gave us money, okay? Because this is a capitalistic enterprise that we are doing here, okay?
Yes, sir.
This is a black capitalistic business, and we are trying to get money. All right, we got, I think this is a new one. Let me know if I read it before. My proverbial woke auntie, aunt and uncle. I'm a guy from Queens who was raised around nothing but my blacks. After relocating to Maine with my family, I was out of my element for a whole last year until a college buddy of mine put me on to you guys. Three Guys On and a slew of other great black podcasts, but I loved the first episode I listened to and I haven't stopped since. I've gone overboard recently after my climbing the paywall and rewatching old movies such as almost all the Marvel ones just to hear the reviews. And now I'm revisiting the Game of Thrones reviews as well. Hey, aww, get that money word. Y'all two have kept me sane and black in Maine, which is a tall order at times, it seems. Thank you for the laughter, the nuance, and all the little lessons I store away to even share with my little one every, one day. Peace, K. Lewis. Thanks, K. Lewis.
Thank you.
Thank you. Been too long, 5 stars, 5 heart emojis from G. Benton 14. That's aww, it. 5 heart emojis.
You ain't even got to say words, y'all.
We don't even need words anymore.
Emojis is fine with us.
5 heart emojis works to me, okay? Rod and Karen are my sunshine. This is from
aww,
Fist of Bucho, who says, love hearing these two, whether with guest or without, bring a perfect mix of funny, fun, and incisive commentary on the world as experienced through their eyes and ears. Yeah, someone was telling, I was talking to a friend the other day, and Chris Lambert, y'all know him. I was talking to Chris the other day, and he was like, yeah, y'all been killing it on the show for like a minute now, a long time. And I was like, yeah, you know, the pandemic, we've been able to get real good guests and stuff. And he was like, no, I just mean with y'all too. Like, y'all just been doing a great job. He was like, I don't know, y'all just hit y'all stride. And I was like, you know what? Thank you. I'm gonna take that compliment. Mm-hmm. In the 15 years of listening to the podcast, sometimes 10 hours a day, I've checked out many hundreds of different shows, and TBGWT is consistently one of the very best around. Every time I put one of their episodes on, suddenly the world seems like a better place, even when they're talking about how jacked up the world is. And it also doesn't hurt that they are hot. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. We are hot, baby.
That's what I keep hearing. Rod and Karen are hot. That's what they keep saying in these streets. We got some 5-star reviews on Stitcher. I don't know why y'all was like, Stitcher this week, we doing it.
Come on,
thank you,
Stitcher.
Okay, we appreciate y'all. Ancient F says 5 stars, intelligent, engaging, entertaining. It's your man, Ancient Future here. I've been listening for a long time, and I admit to have been slipping on the reviews, but my favorite country cousin Karen has made me sit down to give you all something back for what you give us. All Yay. I can say is you guys keep me in stitches, make me think deeply, and give me plenty of ammunition to fire back at these crazy ass white folks I'm surrounded by. You have me researching how to start my own podcast. There's so much going on here in Louisville, Kentucky, but the media outlets here for us are steadily shrinking. Anyway, thank you so much for what you do, and much, much more success. P.S. Go get you one of those COVID-19 business loans and expand. Can you imagine a Rod and Karen TV show? You know what? Yes, I can imagine that. I don't know what it would look like necessarily, but mm-hmm. Yeah. We could be like, you know, the married Southern. Well, actually, it would be nothing like it then. Deez and Mero, okay? I was going to say, I love their podcast TV show.
I do!
Anyway, 5 stars. And the Ancient Future left another one, says, The Bomb, and another one, just want to hit you with one more since I fell behind. Love y'all, peace. Thank you.
Come on, we'll take 10.
Come through, extra 5-star review. Sammy G says, the best podcast on earth. Okay, I know I was supposed to do this a while ago. I've been listening for at least 5 years. So here it is, my 5 on it. This is the best podcast I have ever listened to, and I'm always twitching in anticipation for the next episode. Thank you so much for being so great at what y'all do. I wish there was more black podcasts like y'all. My other fave is So Well Spoken. They are not as consistent, but they do some great stuff. Maybe you guys could bring them on. I would literally die if this happened. Thanks again. Oh, thank you. You know, we always listen to a whole lot of podcasts,
yeah,
and
I don't think
I think that's my first time hearing of So Well Spoken.
Me too.
So, but I'll make sure to try to check it out. Toy Edmonds says, the greatest podcast ever. Hey y'all, it's Toy. I'm finally able to leave y'all a review. I've given up on waiting for Spotify to get their lives. Anywho, this is the best podcast I've ever listened to. I love their comedy and nuanced view on all things black culture, LGBT, news, politics, etc. Rod's impressions are hilarious, and Karen's laugh makes me laugh even harder, especially in the background of their This Too Much episodes. This podcast gives black people a little bit of everything. I tell everyone I can about their podcast. They also allow me to be their guest on the Medium Talk episodes. So yes, it was a great interview. I hope you guys check mm-hmm. it out. So I can share my book and the story of domestic violence to bring awareness. I can go on and on about how amazing they are. Well, you're amazing, Toy. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for letting me interview you. All that good stuff. Speaking of what y'all had to say, let's get into y'all comments on the blackguywhotips.com website, where each episode you can leave comments under. We did 4 this week. The first one was a feedback episode, 2138. Brilliant, hilarious, engaging, authentic. 5 comments. Whitney Osmodius says, Central Park Karen should get whatever punishment law enforcement would give a black person who did what she did. I personally would like to see see consequences for racist actions. I hear you. And I think at this point it really just determines how you feel and what you think consequences means.
Agreed.
So if consequences is the system that we feel unfairly over incarcerates black people should unfairly over incarcerate her, I understand that's kind of the eye for eye thing. I think Christian Cooper basically says her name is trash. She lost her job. You know, did she get kicked out of her building? I know she got her dog back. But, you know, if that's where he stops, that's where he stops. It's really, you know, for him, that's enough. But for somebody else, it might not be enough. And, you know, that seems where the whole conflict between people's discussion of what he should be up to and what, you know, what they feel like should happen. That seems to be the whole conflict. But honestly, the criminal justice system, quote unquote, has enough evidence with or without that man to convict this woman.
Right. And I'm fine with whatever the system decides.
Yeah. D. Ramsey, aka Mother Jenkins, says, I'm playing catch up on with episodes. I love episode 2135 with Frankie French Toast, not her real name. She was magnificent. I know that the past 4 years of me tuning into the podcast have provided me with information and insight into various social, political, and community issues. Thanks, D. Ramsey. Mm-hmm. Monica says, how dare you, Rod and Karen? How dare you talk to me like you know me? You're not my parents. You were talking about people who can't be in silence with themselves as I was listening to you while listening to NPR, while doing the dishes, while doing my laundry, while waiting for the water to filter, while I was making lemonade, all at the same time. That doesn't mean I can't be in silence. Harumph. Just kidding. Just kidding. That definitely is what it means. It's something I've struggled with. That's why I fall asleep to your podcast or others sometimes. I really liked hearing about how you both use counting to calm your mind and bring yourself back to the moment. I'm going to explore the idea of micro meditation. I'm not consistent enough with regular meditation yet. Micro meditation might be easier, shorter. Yeah,
it's shorter periods of time.
And work your way up, I guess.
Yeah. It's an exercise because it's almost something if you're not accustomed to it. Yeah, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 30 seconds, and next thing you know, you're doing a minute. Next thing you know, you're gonna switch it to 5 or 10. Like, it is a gradual process, particularly if you have a brain that constantly runs all the time.
Kim Doc says, I fuck with all of y'all, a host of truly beautiful people. Very grateful for this community. Oh, that's just a very nice.
Thank you.
Very nice comment.
Sweet.
EVE says, Arby's is still delicious, and there was a line in the drive-thru the last time I went. Oh, listen, I never said there's not a line in the drive-thru. I said there's never a line inside. The reason there's a line in the drive-thru is because they have to make everything to order because no one ever orders there. So literally, if you order a roast beef sandwich, they have to start cooking the roast beef as you're waiting in line. So you have to wait 30 minutes for them to roast the beef or whatever. That's not unusual at all. Bad service can create a good line. No, the lack of customers can also create a good line in fast food. You know, you never, like, the line is never long. Like, when the line is long at Popeyes, we all know because it's bad service, right? Like, we're like, the good food is delicious, but also they had a worse service. The line is long at Chick-fil-A, it's because everybody wants some Chick-fil-A. And they can have people outside taking your order in the middle of 103 degree heat. Yep, they don't care.
They'll be out there.
Walkie talkies, relay teams, snipers on the roof.
Yes!
They got all of the shit, but they gonna have a long line because people love Chick-fil-A. But, you know, when the line is long at Arby's, it just means two people wanted Arby's. Anyway, the poll was, have you made any friends in the TBGWT community? Yes, not yet. Or I don't know how to make friends. Karen?
Yes, I have made friends.
I have too. Some of my best friends now.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. 23.6% say yes. 46% say not yet. And then 30.5% say I don't know how to make friends, which I understand. Okay. It's hard. If you don't learn at a young age, how are you supposed to learn as an adult? And these motherfuckers are not as friendly once they get to be grown. Episode 2139, public debate. We had 4 comments on this one. Kim says, Karen, you spoke the truth about weight. I thought my mama and her family were the only ones like this. It drives me crazy. And I have told her so many motherfucking times to stop that. You're right. You know what you look like. I don't need nobody to tell me that. The thing is, she ain't small, but that is her go-to. She's 76 now and ain't changing, but I will let her know how I feel when she says something foul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And don't care nothing about your little hurt feelings, you know, because it comes to a point where you have to kind of stand up in your truth and become an adult. Because to most parents, you know, no matter how old you are, you still quote unquote their child, and that's understandable. Some parents never allow their children to grow up. You know, they still feel like that they can boss you around and quote unquote tell you what to do. And particularly most black people have been taught we do certain things out of respect, which is cool. But I can respectfully tell you that you get on my motherfucking nerves and you need to chill out, because now we grown. You don't wipe my ass. You don't, you know, you're not, there's no shelter here. I can do my own thing, you know. And I think sometimes for some parents, that's a very, very hard pill to swallow.
Ms. Barnes 72 says, weight is a sore subject with me and my family. I was always the heaviest in my family, no matter how active I was. My grandmother would ask me all the time, how much did I weigh? The failed diets, the starving, making myself throw up, the self-doubt, it was awful. I never have understood how people can just comfortably open their mouths and say foul shit about someone who has gained weight. It's disgusting.
Right. Because you don't never know what they're going through.
You really don't. It's just so weird how much people think other people's bodies are their business. Like, I can see it even if, like, I don't know. It's just so weird. Because it's like it's personally offensive to them to look at someone else. But it's like, that's not you. No one's making you do shit. So, like, if you think the only kind of person that, you know, is acceptable weighs a certain amount of weight, you don't, like, then you can date that kind of person. You can be that kind of person. You can do all this shit, but to, like, put that pressure on strangers, on celebrities, everybody, it's such a weird thing to want.
It's a form of judgment. At the end of the day,
obviously it's a form of judgment.
Yeah, a lot of people do that. They don't even know why they do it. And some of these people that are quote unquote are small and picking on you have struggled with the same things. A lot of them are just on the other side now. So now since I'm on the other side, I can dish out the pain and the hurt that was poured upon me, because that's quote unquote part of the process.
Yeah. I remember I had a friend, he smoked cigarettes, and I think I said it on the show a long time ago. One of my random thoughts. So I was like, fat people and people that smoke, we should just be cool with each other. It really is no need for either one of us to be judging each other.
Mm-mm.
You know, like, you want to inhale smoke and fuck up your lungs. I want to eat loaded nacho cheese fries. What the fuck is the problem? Like, let's kick it. Like, you know, but instead, because people that smoke, a lot of times smoking can actually keep you from gaining weight.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll have people that look at somebody that's smoking and be like, there's nothing wrong with that, because they look the right way.
Correct.
You know what I mean? In their minds,
themselves.
Yeah, quote unquote, they look the right way. You know, I remember, like, I hated that she even felt the need to do it, but like, Lizzo put out a video maybe a month ago of just a year of these workouts she does in her backyard on her deck and shit. And, you know, it's like sped up footage, you know, of the like time delay shit. And it's like, yeah, I mean, one, anyone that's ever seen her perform knows Lizzo works out.
You have to do, in order to do that and still sing at right. the level she sings, you have to
and
be
think about,
some form of an athlete.
Right.
Yeah.
Think about what it is. Cause it's not that she does that once a month. She does that shit several times a week, travels between the times. Like, she clearly was in shape. She just wasn't, she didn't look right, quote unquote. And so people that probably could not be in as good shape as her were shitting on her, because it's like, I look different than you, therefore you need to listen to my advice, or, you know, why you gotta wear a bathing suit. It's like, what if somebody like it, who gives a fuck?
Yeah. And it's also one of the things, like you said, she's in better shape. It's like, oh, word, could you do half the shit she does? No,
right.
You know,
but she don't, the thing I'm saying is, it's to me, it's a little sad. She shouldn't even have to put that video out.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of obvious she's an athlete, because look what you do, and you're entertaining, and who cares how you got there?
Mm-mm.
You know, because people make it seem like it's out of concern, but you don't love Lizzo. You don't even know her. You know, that's a stranger to you. You know, you don't know her any more than some stranger walking down the street, and you still would feel very judgmental about her. So, yeah, weight is such a weird thing. It just triggers people. Monica said, and the most triggering thing is if somebody is fat and they don't just fucking hate themselves for it.
Ooh, that burns people up. Yeah. I don't know why. You love yourself being fat. They act like something that, like, it's a mental disease or something. And you're like, no, I like my body the way it is.
Especially if it's a black woman. They fucking, like, it's like the devil just jumped up out of them. I was like, what the fuck? No. And that maybe it's because, you know, historically black women's bodies have been so they've been owned, they've been property, they've been so heavily critiqued, they've been demonized for at once not being like a white woman's body, but at the same time we praise white women for having the figure we attribute to black women. So it's just very, it's like such a weird thing. So maybe that's part of it too, but Man, I really hate it. Monica says, I found the idea of having public debates on TV again intriguing. Those debate programs from the 60s and 70s were quite long in duration, and today I think they've been replaced with talking heads and sound bites on some news networks and maybe the Sunday morning politics shows. But these seconds long back and forth are no longer proper debates. They end up being just quotes in search of virality. It's only talking, not listening. Yeah, you know what I would compare it to? It was like, we have turned the game of basketball, like, let's say long form debates used to be like watching a 2.5 hour game of basketball. And I guess at some point people went, this is boring, I don't want to see this, blah, blah, blah. So what happened instead is that they said, well, what do you want to see? It's like, I like the dunk contest. And so we have just turned basketball into the dunk contest. And then this is like, what happens is if you make everything the dunk contest, everything has a lot less substance, you know, the tone, the pacing. Like, LeBron James is no longer the best player in the world if the entire game of basketball is just a dunk contest. Then we're like, yeah, Vince Carter is the greatest basketball player to ever play. Michael Jordan is up there, but he ain't the top no more. You know, that kind of thing. That's what it feels like we did to public discourse, where it's like, okay, but how can we turn this into a 30-second clip back and forth dunk contest where at the end of it we go, ooh, Don Lemon zinged him, and that has replaced what we used to have, public debate.
Correct.
Someone sent me a link to a podcast. It was like the Dark Horse podcast, and it had all these black academics, this round table, quote unquote, talking about the race problem. It was 2 hours long. The only problem was I thought it had too many people on it. It had like 6 or 7 different people talking when it should have had about 2 or 3.
That's a lot.
But the point being, it was a rigorous discussion that, you know, I didn't really agree with a lot of it, or, you know, because it had certain conservative type leaning black people. You know, when you're talking academics, it's really aloof. It's very aloof. They're very distant from the problem. They don't really see the humanity in the problem. They might cherry pick a couple anecdotal examples, but they don't really see the people as human. They see this is a problem to have things prescribed to it, right? And I'm listening to them and whatnot, and but there was something about it where I listened to the whole 2 hours, because I was like, oh cool, a long form discussion on a long form problem. You know, I don't want to see you try to wrap up race in 10 minutes. It's never going to be able to, you're not going to be able to touch it in any, you know, in any way that actually is tangible.
Agreed.
So yeah, do we no longer have the attention span for watching long in-depth discussions, not on network TV, television, but the rise of podcasts and digital presentation and workshops, especially during the pandemic, lets me know people will show up for listening. There's a company called Intelligent Squared that has been hosting live debates all over the world since 2002. Okay, I didn't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
They post all their debates on their YouTube channel. They even have some virtual ones on there now. I always wanted to go on there. They were usually hosted at NYU, but I never got to go. You reminded me of them. Public debate still remain kind of a niche event. That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I don't know that a public debate is ever going to be better TV than The Bachelor. You know, for what TV is trying to do and what a debate is trying to do. Like, the goal is to get you to watch between commercials. But whether or not this dude is going to cheat or has some racist tweets or whatever is much more compelling than sitting down and watching Ta-Nehisi Coates and that McWhorter dude go back and forth about race. Most people are going to tap out, so I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Quero knew exactly. Oh, okay. So Evie says Kyle Quero knew exactly what he was doing. He just didn't expect the backlash. He is trash for that. I don't even remember who Kyle Quero is now. You remember who that was?
You know I don't.
Man, it's been a... Oh, it was the dude talking about Jill Scott. Yeah. Ain't that some shit? He pissed the whole internet off 3 days later. I'm like, who the fuck? Who? And he played football and I don't know who he is.
You know I'm always... You know my answer is who?
He got to get better at football for me to keep up. Would you like to see a return to public debate on TV? Yes, no, or I don't care either way. Karen?
I don't care either way.
All right, Karen's in the 30%. I'm in the yes category, so 55% of people want to see it, and 15% say no. And I would like to see, maybe Netflix could just do it or something. Like, I just want to see it, man. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's an audience for this shit. I don't know. Miss Barnes says, absolutely, social media has gotten folks so complacent to say any old crazy thing behind the keyboard. If there was a face-to-face discussion, I promise it would change the course of the conversation. I think so too. I think also some of these ideas, they fall flat upon rigorous examination, or when you start asking for long form discussions. And I think that's a very telling thing about these ideas and how unsolvable some problems are, but also how bombastic people talk online when they really know the reason they can say that is because they don't have to have a solution. Yeah. They don't have to have a reality. They can just throw it out in the theory in the ethereal space of social media or the internet and just walk away like, yeah, what about it?
No explaining, no yeah. in-depth, no critical thinking. Yes.
Yeah, I would love to see some of this stuff have to be fleshed out if you don't have an answer for us to see it and be like, oh, okay, they don't have an answer beyond this. You know, to have some, because it's different in an interview where the interviewer is trying to help you. You know, I do interviews on our show. I'm always trying to help the person I'm interviewing. I don't really do hostile interviews. So if they seem like they don't got an answer to that, all right, cool. We got to move on. You know, I'm not going to stop you and be like, well, I need you to figure this out. Right. So, but in a debate, it's the opposite. Your opponent in that debate, the person on the stage is going to try to be like, hey, this is the weakness in your argument. You know, like, you got to fashion something out of that. So anyway, 2140, Reagan returns. Our girl Reagan Gomez came back on.
Yes, she did.
You know, come through, Reagan Gomez, or Begging Gomez, as I like to call her. But yeah, we had a great conversation with her. We got some comments. Cheyenne New says, I think Karen's words will help me a lot in the future. Dividing my expectations of marriage from reality and realizing film tropes aren't real life was definitely a wake-up call. Mm-mm. I didn't even realize that every marriage is different until I heard her say that, which is absolutely insane. Anyways, thanks for the common sense, Supreme Karen.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's so weird,
and
because
I learned that the hard way. Me as being a woman, it is amazing how many women get, particularly newlywed women, particularly when they get younger, get married and just do ridiculous shit because it's the way you thought it's gonna be. I'm gonna be like my mama. If my mama was stay at home wife, you know, sometimes some women go that route because that's what they think they're supposed to do. They think if their mama worked from home and cooked and cleaned and took care of the children, you know, while their husband barely did nothing, they'll take on that trope. It's like, instead of trying to figure out what works best for you and your mate, you know, I've seen even some family members where, you know, they're having this burden and they're going through this stuff and they actually got a mate that cares. Mm-hmm. And it's very, I don't know what's happening over here. My computer went down.
Oh, okay. No, your light went off over there and everything. Okay, go ahead. The sound is still on.
Okay, you see me. Yeah, where, you know, they have, you know, a mate, you know, mate that cares about them and a mate that will be willing to do more, but they just have to be vocal and demand and actually just ask. Like, you know, and sometimes women are afraid to ask men for help because they don't know how the man is going to respond a lot of times either. And so, you know, most good men, loving men and kind men, especially if they love their spouse, actually want to help with the kids, actually want to help. And some women, you have this thing, well, my mama always did it. And so you have this pride sometimes as a woman is, if I don't cook and clean and take care of my kid, if I don't do this, I have failed as a woman. And that's not true. You're fucking exhausted. And then when your mate wants to be intimate with you, you're tired because you've been working for like 14 hours, 15 hours, 20 hours, go to bed and you just want to sleep. You don't want to actually be intimate with your mate, but being intimate with your mate is a part of the relationship too.
Yeah. And men have a checklist in their head too, from all this bullshit expectations and stuff we've been taught. So you end up with men that think, you know, marriage is just about sexual performance. It's just about how much, hold on a second. Let me pause this. So yeah, men believe in gender roles and stuff like that too, and I think a lot of times it ends up being destructive to the household, because you end up with men tying their egos and stuff like how much money they bring into the house, materialistic shit, what kind of having a job, what kind of job, all these physical attributes and being emotionally distant and all this different stuff. And, you know, just, I'm just going to watch football in the man cave and, you know, keep these damn kids out of my way. And it all hurts, men in these situations.
Yes,
and it's mostly harm you're inflicting on yourself. And I think also it teaches women, don't stand up, just do the work, just do this, do the, you know, a good woman would do blank. And these weird archetypes that are based on white supremacist patriarchal capitalist ideals that's been happening since we were fucking, like, you know, since slavery and shit, where a white man earned all the money, his wife was expected to fucking do all the shit in the house because that's how much white men used to make at the time, and white men were the only ones that could have jobs, and all this shit. And then just the world changed where two people in a household don't have jobs, they're probably not doing too well. Where childcare is more than a woman's job, it's not the only thing she's responsible for anymore. So you just end up with all these different situations that people still want to treat like the old school situation. And I think that's why you have people that think marriage is still, you know, that they keep trying to make it into, keep trying to turn it back into that, and that's what happens.
Yeah, and also I am thankful for people fighting to change the definition of marriage. I'm just keep that real. I'm here for people saying no, this normal shit is not a marriage. Like, marriage has all types of definitions. Marriage has all types of meanings.
Not even just marriage, like relationships.
Correct.
Like, it's also like, it reminds me of the book Conflict Is Not Abuse, and she talks about one of the mistakes she thinks that a lot of LGBTQ people made when pushing for marriage equality is that it then reframed a lot of LGBTQ relationships that had broken the mold of patriarchy, that had broken the mold of monogamy, broken the mold of marriage, and it turned people into, like, it's not respectable if it doesn't turn into man woman or man man or woman woman or trans person. Like, one person monogamous relationship is the goal. And so the limits of the definition of marriage fucked it up for in her mind. Like, this now has pushed us back. It's some, like, yes, we should be had a right to get married, all that stuff, but also in the right to get married, we turn into the pursuit to get married. And once it turns into the pursuit to get married, is marriage actually a happy making initiative for everybody? Is this a thing for everyone to want? And I mean, it's just deep questions like that. And as Cheyenne New said, you know, Karen said, every marriage is different. And I think that's true. Like, every person is different. So how can two people have the same relationship as two different people? That doesn't even make sense.
Yes,
so,
because everybody, you and your significant other, spouse, or a group of people all have different life experiences than your parents. You literally were raised in different generations.
Right.
So your expectations and what you think that your partner should be, and all, like the definitions have changed. So why would you expect to have this exact same marriage as somebody else?
And it's because we get taught this shit, because we all get taught the same fairy tales. We think that that's right, and then we punish ourselves and make ourselves feel like failures for not living up to this. You know, if you get divorced, you don't, if you you have a child and you're not married, if you have a child and he leaves, if like, it's just all these different things. It's like, that doesn't make sense. Everybody's life is fucking different.
Yes,
no,
it
it's
is.
Not gonna flow together in this perfect harmony of foreverness for two people forever.
Yeah. And also the thing is, it quote I'm gonna say quote unquote, even if it's something where the roles reverse, where the woman actually makes more money than the man, the woman actually works outside of the house, the man is at home, all of a sudden he's less than the man.
Right. Yes. Yeah, all these weird, just weird shit that don't have nothing to do with, just like Lizzo's body and all this stuff. It doesn't really have much to do with other people, but we keep inserting ourselves. That's why people got so obsessed with Will and Jada, is because we want to peek into their life to see what it says about our own. Miss Barnes says, one of the many beautiful things about this podcast are the guests that you bring, mainly because I learned something new every time. Sadly, I had no idea who Reagan Gomez was, but as she was talking, I was thinking to myself, damn, she sounds so much like Roberta from The Cleveland Show. I'm subscribing to her podcast and adding Queen Sugar to my watch list. Thank you again for highlighting talented folks like Reagan. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Big fan.
Yes.
Trey says, hey Rod and Karen, thank you so much for having Reagan on. She was such a great guest and a breath of fresh air. Hashtag Zaria Peterson Hive. I feel for her and every parent and teacher out there deciding on whether or not to send their kids back to school.
Me too, baby.
I don't even have kids and it has my nerves bad, lol.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully parents will do what they need to do to keep their kids safe. We can only hope. On Will and Jada. On Will and Jada, kudos to them for being open and honest about their relationship. I'm still shocked that they were willing to be that open about their relationship because they could have easily ignored it or lied about it. Yeah, and that's, you know, and honestly, just depends on what you're projecting because none of us know the truth. Some people think they did get up there and lie. So I don't even, you know, I don't even know that they told the truth. I know how it felt to me and the way that I'm projecting on the shit, but I'm smart enough to know I don't know what the fuck is going on. And
yeah, nobody does.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. A lot of people think they do. That's why I don't really like discussing it with people, because they really will sit up there and tell you as if you fucking are insane and just came up with these theories. And it's like, we're all coming up with theories. None of us know shit, you know? Anyway, it definitely seems like they took the time to sit down with one another and really define what they know their relationship is. That is very powerful when you think about it. In the end, it seems they grew from it emotionally. So again, kudos to them. Yeah, man. Like I said, I do, at least from what they told me, what they told the world, it seemed to me like more believable than this alternative where they have an open relationship with all these NDAs and that no one's ever snitched.
Because I think if that was, maybe, like I said, this is me projecting, I think if that was the truth, they would have came out and said that.
I just think it's easy. I think it's an easier sell when everyone already thinks it.
Correct.
Because there's no, like, honestly, people would almost be bored if they would have came out and said, we're just in an open relationship, y'all. This is just one of our jump offs just acting stupid.
Yeah, everybody, back to normal. Womp.
Everybody would have been like, well, that's what we've been said. Now, you know, but I think in a weird way, it's disappointing to people because they built them up as just like, this is how you run an open relationship. Mm-hmm. No one ever knows their business. They've been going around fucking and sucking everybody and it's just as quiet as kept. And when that did happen, it's like, well, damn, I've been saying that this is what open relationships look like and these are two of the most well-liked beautiful people in Hollywood and they just said it was some quasi cheating type shit. Well then fuck them, you know. So I don't, like I said, I don't put a lot of hope and faith in celebrity anyway, but mm-hmm. It just all feels like we're projecting. I don't think I know anything more about them than what they said in the interview,
right?
You know, and I watched the interview, I watched the whole thing, so you know, it just, I still didn't walk away like, and now I figured it out. I was just like, I don't know, maybe they telling the truth.
Yeah, don't know.
Finally, I hope Reagan gets to direct more TV series. I remember her talking on Twitter about shadowing the legendary director Julie Dash on the Queen Sugar set. Her show idea she mentioned sounds dope. I could definitely see it on Freeform or the CW. Hope it gets greenlit ASAP. Peace. Thanks again, Rod and Karen, Trey Swindu. Thank you.
Thank you.
The poll was, which was your favorite? Okay. Girlfriends, Moesha, Sister, That's So Raven, The Parkers, or Living Single? Karen?
Girlfriends
is Karen's favorite out of all those.
Let me see, you said
girlfriends,
uh-huh.
Moesha, Sister, That's So Raven, The Parkers, or Living Single?
Living Single.
Oh, okay. 63% of the audience says Living Single. And I'm with that 63%. I think of my favorite, that was that, see, the Living Single was my favorite. And those are just the ones I could think of off the top of my head,
and I've seen,
that were led by black women specifically.
Yes. And I've watched some of the other ones and I enjoyed some of the other ones, but if I had to really think out of that group, the one that I actually watched the most, and I watched some of those other ones, not all of them, but some of the other ones more than others, because it was just something about Living Single that just, I just loved that series.
Yeah. Kim Doc says, if only we could relive this era of television all over again. Truly innovative thinkers that even inspired whites to knock off their concepts. Ann says, the only option is Living Single. Yeah, it's just interesting because I don't maybe now we're starting to have that look at this, multiple shows about black women that have black women leads. Like, now I think we're there, you know. But the thing is, they're not sitcom-y. It's more like drama and HBO and Freeform and all this stuff. But I am glad that that era is coming back. It's just different, you know. Nothing ever repeats itself. So, you know, I'm glad that it's coming back, though, that we have this time. All right, let's get to the last episode of the week. No Shame Day 2141 with our girl Bossy Igpe.
Yes, we enjoyed Bossy.
JL Covan says, love the discussion on Hillary versus Biden. I'm fine with Biden, of course, and like that he basically adopted Jay Inslee's climate plan, but the fact that people still write to me on social media saying I couldn't vote for Hillary, but I would gladly vote for Biden. She was just flawed. Like, they are heroes and not either sexist or assholes will never stop annoying me.
Come on, JL.
Right. And if JL Covan is calling you a sexist,
I mean,
you a sexist.
If JL points you out, come woo!
On. Like, come
it's
on
bad,
now.
Buddy.
That's bad.
Come on, buddy, come on.
Also, Eric Holder's wife was the doctor who delivered both of my nephews. Oh, damn, small world.
Mm-hmm.
And then Eric Holder locked them up because it was born in D.C. Nah, just kidding. Rob One says, at some point as a community, we're going to have to address anti-Semitism. The Nick Cannon and Deshaun Jackson incidents made me think back to late 2019 when a couple of Hebrew Israelites in New Jersey shot and killed some Jewish people in a grocery store. Yes, I think we might even did that on Guess the Race. And we were like, they was black? That don't even sound like a black crime. And it's like, oh, you read up later, you know, like a week or so later, because, you know, it takes a while to investigate these things.
Mm-hmm.
And if once the investigative journalism came out, it's like, oh, these niggas were some Hebrew Israelites that got a hold of some guns and went to kill some Jewish people. And I immediately was like, yes, I remember 5 percenters in my college, and they were
mm-hmm.
definitely anti-Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't like this shit that
even
black
people. I really understood what the word meant at the time. I was just like, that don't sound right.
Yeah, I don't like this shit black people trying to do with the semantics of like, we can't be racist because we don't have power. Look, man, if you're killing Jewish people, if you're talking shit about Jewish people in an environment where they're being killed in hate crimes,
what?
You do have power. I'm sick of this shit where we opt out, man, where it's, you know, yeah, we get to track in transphobia, but then we say black, then when some black trans woman dies, we're all sharing all these things on the timeline. This is so sad. The 27th one this year, blah, blah. Well, you're adding to this environment when you don't speak out against it, when you don't say, hey, this is fucked up, when you don't take knowledge, take time out to be like, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to joke about, you know, how I'm not going to respect your pronouns. I'm not going to joke about you a man and all that shit. When you start thinking on that level, I think that's one of the ways you can aid in stopping it. But I think when you just go, well, fuck it, I ain't got nothing to do with it, but oh, it's so sad they killed this poor, like to me, that's very hypocritical. And the way I communicate with stuff like this or relate to it is always through race as a black person. I don't like and don't want and would not support listening to some white person make jokes about George Floyd's death. I wouldn't do it. You know, if they were just making jokes about, yeah, he got killed, ha ha ha, wasn't it hilarious? I would not fuck with them because this is a real thing to me. This is something that is happening a lot in America, you know? And so I'm like, when these things affect me emotionally, no, I don't want to see it be fodder for a joke because it's not a joke to me in that type of way, because it's still a real problem. And I feel like the attitude of belittling it, normalizing it, adds to the thing happening. That's why people say stuff like, you can't joke about blank, blank, and blank. What they're really saying is, don't trivialize it. It doesn't really mean you can't joke about it. You come up with a good enough joke, shit, people gonna laugh. Even if it's wrong, people will laugh if the joke is good enough. But to trivialize something is where people start feeling like, well, damn, what is the point here? You know, it's the difference between Dave Chappelle's first special when he came on Netflix and he made a couple transphobic jokes, mostly about Caitlyn Jenner and all this shit. But then the last, not the 846, but the one before that, where it was just mean and it was just like, you know, 20-30 minutes of just transphobic material, because he had become so fucking, like, I don't know, triggered by people not liking that he did it, that he wanted to, like, prove some type of point. It's the difference between those two things, I think, when it comes to this. Oh, you about to say something?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So yeah, anyway, all that stuff to say, the anti-Semitism shit, it's not even jokes. And I think we as black people, it's just, it's whack to see black people hide behind being black as a reason that this is okay.
Come on, you wouldn't tolerate that with white people. We are not, right. And we are not a special group just because we've been oppressed, my dear.
Right. It's just whack. It's like, cause we can't prove that this is a thing that black people are exerting force on Jewish people with, that somehow that's okay. You know, it's this is the thing that people always defend Louis Farrakhan with. And I'm always like, nah, you can't, then you not about it. Then stop judging people. Don't look down on nobody. Cause if you're like upholding Louis Farrakhan and saying, let's just forget about the transphobia, let's forget about the misogyny, let's forget about the homophobia, let's forget about the anti-Semitism, isn't he a good guy? It's like, nah, because you don't accept that from nobody else. Mm-mm. And you damn sure, and then they go, well, I mean, it's not like he got a lot of power, so it's not like he can do anything. It's like, that doesn't make it okay.
Right.
Because if we're really being real, the average white person don't have a lot of power, and y'all want a motherfucker to go to jail for calling the police on a nigga because he wanted to put a dog up. Like, let's not act like it's a power thing. It's just some shit is abhorrent and we don't fuck with it. So, you know, I think we need to be vigilant about that, you know, or at least don't let people hide behind being black based off of it. I don't care if, you know, we're not gonna make Hotep stop Hotepping. I'm not stupid.
No.
You know, like, people keep doing this thing where they go, well, if we just, like, make, you know, come down on them, tell them they wrong, they don't care.
They don't.
Nick Cannon didn't care until some motherfucking money got missing. So it ain't just that, but it's just for your own sake, for your own soul. Like, denounce that shit. And if you're not hip on what anti-Semitism is, look it up. There's all these resources. There's all these people that are putting threads on the timelines and Medium articles and shit on why exactly what Nick Cannon said was fucked up. All right. But you're right. They did kill those Jewish people. I forgot about that. I've always thought of them as just some fringe group that no one really listens to. It's obvious that some of their messaging are becoming mainstream. And when people with celebrities start giving credence to it, we can't just laugh it off anymore. It was good hearing Bossy on the non-recap episode. Thanks, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you can't. Once this shit starts getting dangerous like this, you cannot, man. I'm telling you, it's a weird kind of anti-blackness to the fact that they let these dudes revel in this kind of shit. It's a weird kind of like, well, they niggas, they, that's what they do. And it's like, mm-hmm. They would not accept this of some white dude. If this was
right.
Just Chris Hemsworth, they would have been like, what the fuck are you doing? You have to stop that immediately. You know, I think Chris Hemsworth did have a picture at a party where people were like dressing, he was either in Nazi regalia or Native American stuff or something, and they roasted his ass and he was apologizing, never did it again. Like, this, that's what you gotta do. It's, you know, you can, but I guess if you're black, you can hide in the defiance of, wow, they trying to make a black man sit down. Like, no, man, just don't do this.
It's wrong.
But yeah, it's just a double standard. Trey Swindu says, so glad you guys had Bossy on the regular show. She's always a bright light for me in the face of this dreadful darkness. I always want to thank Bossy because her being so open about her own mental health journey, it in turn has helped me be me with my own in dealing with anxiety and depression. By seeing someone with the same complexion as you go through that and talk about black mental health really matters and really helps. Thanks for everything you do, Rossi. Thanks again, Bossy, Karen, and Rod. Trey.
Thank you.
EVE says, I'm not sure why anyone is surprised Christian Cooper refuses to further participate with the prosecution of Amy Cooper. I kind of peep how he was when he ended the recording as soon as she leashed her dog. That brother just loves animals and wants to mind his business. Now, does this bitch deserve to be prosecuted? Of course, but it's not up to us to tell Christian how he should handle things. EVE, that's exactly what the fuck I believe, right? Yeah. There.
And that's been my pushback towards everybody. Not that she shouldn't be punished. Not that there should be the consequences, the repercussions, but he has the right to feel however he wants to feel. And if he don't want to be your freedom fighter, he ain't got to be your goddamn freedom fighter. And yeah, he has the right and choice of the autonomy over his body, because we're quick to be like, well, give people freedom, black people freedoms and rights. This is part of that freedoms and rights shit that y'all talk about, but people are just mad because it's not coming out in the form of revenge. Mm-hmm. And since it's not coming out in the form of revenge, you act like what he's doing, what he does and how he feels doesn't matter. If I'm the victim, I get to determine how I respond to it, but it does not mean that I want to participate in the punishment process. You know, I can allow the punishment process to go on without me actually being in it. If they feel like they have enough evidence and they feel like they can go forth, so be it. But it's not my job to tell him how he is supposed to feel and what he is supposed to do just because I'm mad.
The part that's really weird to me with him is he didn't forgive her, but people are treating it like he's some, like, look at him just forgiving a white woman. He never did. He just was like, I'm done with this. Like, his whole thing was he want to watch birds in the park. I don't know how this got so complicated for people just because he won't fit their agenda. He don't want to do all this. Never did.
Yeah, and in my opinion, and I've always felt like this, everything that has happened so far, a lot of shit's been against his will. He didn't even record it. His sister recorded. He didn't want to put out. His sister put it on. So it's like, from the beginning, he's been telling y'all, like, this ain't me. I'm not about this life. And everybody was like, well, since we out here, we going to dictate and tell you what you... No, he's been saying no from the beginning. So no, right. It's not surprising, not trying to be funny, that he's like, I don't want to go through the process.
Yeah, it's also weird the way people work, because if this would have been like someone else having a film put out about them against their will, we were like, what about their right to not be, they didn't want that to happen. But because we're right now in a super bloodlust for white people fucking up, you know, these Karens and all this shit. We're in such a bloodlust right now. We actually don't care about the black people involved.
Mm-mm.
Like, we care about us having our bloodlust sated more than we care about them being centered in this conversation and what they want out of shit. This is all about us. And you know, if you talk about that and get to that point, people want to dismiss it, but that's the truth as I see it. The poll was, who is the best of these black men?
What did you say?
Who is the of these best black men?
I don't know who is.
Here's your choices. Who is the of these best black men, Karen? Okay, are you ready?
Yes.
Terry Crews, Kanye West, Nick Cannon, Christian Cooper.
And Christian Cooper, the one we just talked about?
Yeah.
Him.
Okay, all right. 2% say Terry Crews. 2% say Kanye West. So I was glad to know that they listened to the show.
Shout out to you for being truthful.
Yeah, one vote. So I'm assuming that was Kanye West and Terry Crews. Nick Cannon actually got 14%. Because Nick Cannon is hilarious. Dave Chappelle tried to tell us. And 81% of people said Christian Cooper. Not a lot of comments. Kim Doc says, I clicked Christian Cooper without even thinking. Glad 70%+ of us are on the same wavelength. We need better leaders, or to elevate amplified voices over to Libs and the Chances and Terry's and Steven Jackson's. What a wasteland. Yeah, I forgot about, I keep forgetting about Talib Kweli. I think I have had that dude muted on Twitter since I've been on Twitter. Like, it's like this shit didn't even happen. Like,
I don't see it.
Like, I keep seeing articles about it. I'm like, damn, he's still going? Wow, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. Everybody ain't blocked him yet? Okay. Like,
doo, 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 doo.
Yeah. Like, and then people keep adding him, so he keep going. Like, it's, mm-hmm. But see, it's that other thing too, where people on Twitter don't want to admit it. They love this.
Of course.
A celebrity
train wreck, yes,
is giving them attention. And he's doing it all day, every day. And so everyone's getting in their shots, and they keep saying shit that I'm like, y'all know that's not gonna stop him. They're like, why can't his homeboys call him in? I'm like, what about 10 days in a row of talking to people is gonna make you think today's the day that most death can make him stop? He's not gonna stop. He's a grown man, he got money, and he don't got nothing to do. He's gonna be doing this as long as y'all keep talking. That's it. I've never seen anything like this before.
And y'all feeding into each other, so I guess we're gonna be at this for a while.
Yeah, they just keep acting like fucking Punchline and Wordsworth is gonna come out of the damn Come out of Ronkus Records, come out of the Lyricist Lounge and shut this down. God damn, that's a deep pull. You got to know some hip-hop to know what the fuck I'm talking about right now, boy. You got to get a backpack out and get some CDs to know what the fuck I'm just, that reference. But yeah, they not about to do shit. So they're like, why can't black men call him in, like, and do what? Like, hey Talib, could you stop? Now he at me, god damn, now I can't go to sleep. Like, this, everyone just gotta, like, just do a mass Twitter mute, okay?
That's not happening.
All right, let's get to voicemails. We got a few this week. I don't know what happened to Kim Doc's voicemail. She said she left one like a couple weeks ago. It just never showed up in Skype.
We saw her, baby. We don't know what happened.
Yeah, so here's the first one.
Hi, Rod and Karen. This is Peaches 749, Sweet Peach 749. So I'm listening to the episode 2138, brilliant, hilarious, engaging, authentic. And here y'all go talking about these grits again. Now, I am a true salt and butter grits woman, okay, born and raised. I've never once tasted grits with sugar in them. But I've heard about this over and over and over again. So I would like a person who cooks these sugar grits on a regular basis and consumes them, I would like this person to prepare these grits and let us have a taste test, because it could be good. I mean, not to be a traitor to my salt grit people and my salt grit kind, but it could be good. It is just a breakfast cereal, you know, like Farina and Wheatina and those type of things. All right, that's it. Have a good day. Talk to y'all later.
Not gonna fool me, Peaches. Nice try. But I know a Trump supporter when I hear one.
She coming in like a friend.
Peaches and silk. You're not gonna fool me. Oh, we can just try some.
We still love you, baby.
These girls, I tell you, boy, they try to infiltrate these grits. These sugar grits eaters, they not slick. See them coming from a mile away.
Hey, everybody. This is Kim Doc, also known as Monique. And first time caller, long time listener out this bitch. I'm an idiot. I just wanted to call in and leave y'all a voice message. I listened to the the spoiled movie reviews. There we go. On Parasite. Now I started watching it at the beginning of social isolation, and then something happened. I think I might have started watching it too late, and I paused it in like the moment when it had just started, like, really getting into the second part of the movie. And so I was like, all right, as soon as I finish this, I'm going to check in and see if Rod and Karen had done a review of it. And so you guys did. First of all, I really liked the movie. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's something I will watch again, but I probably would. Now, I also watched Frozen, and I felt lied to. And this is why. Niggas was telling me Frozen is the best thing since sliced bread. Oh my God, Elsa, everybody dressing up as Elsa for Halloween. When Anna was my bitch. That was my homegirl. I fuck with her. She was ride or die for her damn sister who wasn't really trying to fuck with her, because of course, I mean, she probably would have killed her with the lightning and the ice stuff. Okay, cool. However, I also felt lied to. And I was told by AppleCare that Let It Go was awesome, but meanwhile, Love Is an Open Door slaps way harder than Let It Go. How dare y'all? I don't get it. I am very frustrated, and I am upset. And I knew that Prince nigga was full of shit from the very moment that I saw.
Oh, she got cut off. Now, I haven't seen Frozen, so this is all probably spoilers for me. All
right, I haven't seen
it. Oh, you haven't seen Frozen either?
No.
Oh, I thought you and Layla went to see it.
No, we didn't go see Frozen.
Okay, all right.
I haven't
seen left another
Frozen
voicemail.
One nor two.
It's Kim again. Of course, you knew a bitch was going to get cut off, because everybody gets cut off on this line. And I laughed at everybody else when they got cut off, and here I go looking dumb. Anyway, getting back, oh, Amazon is here. Getting back to, Parasite, I think one of my favorite shots in the whole movie was, when they found out that the maid had a peach allergy and they were shaving the peach stuff onto like her, her things. That was crazy. I also thought that they had killed her. When they like smashed her face into some peach stuff. So there were so many moments where I was like, okay, that lady is dead. Meanwhile, she wasn't really dead. And it just got really, really reckless and crazy at the end. And I felt like I was, it was very relatable content in terms of y'all are trying to, be a parasite and siphon off of the riches of these people and steal everybody's job so that your whole entire family could come up off of these people. Meanwhile, somebody had already came up off of them. And then you ended up in the same situation as the nigga that was in the basement. So, boom. And you're not going to get out of there because it is what it is. However, I'm wondering if when they sell that house, are they going to uncover the locked, like they gotta move that that bookshelf out the way to see what's up, and then they'll find that little trapdoor thing. I'm guessing, but that's me and my editorial skills, and it's too much like right. Anyway, before I get cut off again, I just wanted to say have a great day, everybody, and peace. Kim Doc, later.
Thanks, Kim Doc. Yeah, it's interesting too because I don't think, did you watch Parasite or just it was just me?
Just you.
Okay, yeah. It's so weird because, like, it didn't quite, like, neatly wrap up as a metaphor. It was almost like a, like a, like a, like how a dream doesn't make sense 100%. Like, you have a dream, you wake up, and you be like, okay, that didn't make 100% sense. It gave me a feeling, but the feeling makes sense. That's how Parasite feels for me because people try to, like, turn the whole allegory into like, this is what it means. It's about capitalism or about scarcity of resources and this. And I'm like, kind of, but kind of not. And it's about vilifying people that you think are doing better than you and then becoming the kind of person that you claim it, a rich person is. Like, it was just a very interesting thing. And I think because of the time we're in, there's a lot of people like kill the rich, eat the rich and shit, so they act like that's what the movie's about, but I didn't think the movie was really about that. As far as the conversation around it, it felt more like what the pursuit of that shit does to people. And I love the movie though. It was just an amazing movie. All right, let's go to the next voicemail. All right, next voicemail. Give it a second. There we go. Oh, butt dial. Cool. So it looks like we got a blank message. Well, thank you for calling in, blank. Mm-hmm. You did the thing this week. All right, last one. This thing is from Daz. Old friend Daz. Team Nintendo. Now that we have a Switch, I guess the truce is on. The war is over. We all team Nintendo over here now.
For real though.
Remember that from back in the day? He used to write a call it about the Nintendos and shit. Oh wait, this voicemail doesn't want to load. What is taking so long? Alright, let me try stopping and starting it.
Hey Rod and Karen, this is Dan. I kinda wanted to thank you guys for introducing me to a couple of books over this quarantine. It started with We Were 8 Years in Power by Ta-Nehisi Coates. I kind of was struggling with finishing it, so I just went audio form. I bought that one. Then I thought going to Audible. I got Baratunde Thurston's How to Be Black. Mm-hmm. And his audio book. He reads that himself, and he great performance. Also with Sarah, I forget her name, but it was called Conflict Is Not Abuse, which is wonderful. I also got Michelle Alexander's New Jim Crow. Mm-hmm. And I just finished Damon Young's Whatever Does It Kill You Make Blacker. Mm-hmm. That's very relatable. I fucking love it. And he did his own voice. The author read the book himself. It's very relatable content. super funny. I kind of want to say with Ta-Nehisi Coates, I've known about him for years, right after the initial election of Barack Obama. I was in Barnes & Noble, and I saw this magazine on the cover that says, "Is this the end of white America?" And I'm like, who writes an article called that? This is going to be either super hot tub or super dope. And I love that article. I kept that particular magazine on me for, like, years until I found out, oh, it's online. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Dash.
Thank you, baby.
First, long-time listener. Yeah.
You've been running a little hot night.
All those books, man. I love those books. I haven't read Michelle Alexander's book yet. I own it. I just haven't gotten around to it. Pandemic has killed my reading, like, vibe, man. Like, I would read, and then I would go out to, like, a restaurant.
Yeah, you
A lot of times I go by myself and just sit, and eat a sandwich or something, and just read, sip on some coffee or something. And I'm just not doing that shit at all. It's just not the same at the crib, man. Mm-mm. But I need to get back. I've been reading The Wedding Party for fucking ever. I just feel like I read like a page and then I'll be like, see you next week. But I gotta get on it.
It gets like that sometimes.
And maybe it's just what I'm reading. Maybe I need to get back into some nonfiction or something. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I swear by all those books. And Conflict Is Not Abuse was just a tough read for me, but it was one I really needed to read. Like, I had to learn some things that, like, things that I feel like the internet circles I traffic in rely so heavily on the abuse terminology, victimization and stuff, that there's some merit to it, obviously, you know, because when you're talking about people who've never been heard before, who've never been acknowledged in the traumas that they've gone through, clearly there is some merit to the fact that they now have a platform to talk about these things. But there's a level of manipulation that can happen. There's a level of unhealthy denial that happens, a lack of compromise, a lack of coordination. And then also, I don't think people have really understand what it means to lead from a place of trauma and why that's a bad thing. You know, imagine that there was a professor and they had to teach a course about racism, right? But this professor would, anytime they started getting up in front of the class to talk about racism, they started crying and they started being like, let me tell you, in my past, people have been racist to me, and I, you know, it's terrible, and white people are horrible, and blah, blah, blah. At some point, the university would be like, I can't let you teach this class because you're not capable of coming in and doing the job of teaching this class, right? Because you have not dealt with the trauma of what has happened to you, and therefore you're leading this classroom from your trauma. So you're saying halfway through the class, I feel triggered, I want all the white people to get out of the class. You're saying halfway through the class, no questions. You're saying, you know, I didn't feel like doing class today, you know, you know, stuff like that, right? Well, that's kind of different. The way that we navigate the internet is like that.
Mm-hmm.
How many spaces are started by people who really haven't dealt with the trauma they've gone through, and they want to have this like public reckoning of their trauma that they're not even done with.
Mm-mm.
So they don't have, they're not in, you know, they haven't dealt with it through therapy. They haven't dealt with it through whether it's medication, whether it's conflict resolution skills. And yet, how many of these people are on pedestals? How many of these people can just self-appoint themselves as, I'm an activist, as I'm the leader of this group, I started this Facebook page, y'all don't like what I say, get the fuck off. You know, how many people are like that? And in addition to that not being healthy for them, because they're going to consistently be triggered and all this stuff, we feed into it. We give them power. We empower the fact that they can't resolve things. We empower the fact that they use abuse language rather than you know, this neutral type of language, right? We empower that because we think that that is, we think our pity and our empathy is empowering them, but in a lot of cases we're infantilizing them and dooming them to repeat the same patterns over and over. And especially when we know now the predictability of it all, right? So for example, if I know I'm a sexual assault survivor and I start a hashtag on Twitter for people to talk about sexual assault, well, there are gonna be people on Twitter who are gonna say some fucked up shit. You, like, I can tell you that right now, with 1,000% certainty. Well, in my, once we get there, if I'm the leader of this thing, I haven't dealt with my trauma, what do I start doing? Demanding that all of you address my trauma. Hey, go get this person. Go do this. Don't put me in this tweet. Don't retweet that. Don't post this. Don't, as opposed to what I can control, logging off. What I can control, making my account private. You know, now I make you responsible for me. You know, it's like when people call, our Facebook group or something, they'd be like, it's a safe space. I'd be like, it's not. Because I can never be responsible for you, and you can never really truly be responsible for me. You know? And we need to get rid of that illusion, because the truth is more sobering than the lie of me putting myself on a pedestal like I can protect you from the internet. I can't. You know? And I think these are the tougher discussions, and Conflict Does Not Abuse gave me the language around it, because it was so different from everything I was reading at the time, and I was like, but this is true. You know, people that refuse to discuss shit with people that they call friends but disagree with, and they kind of turn it into a bullying leverage of, you're gonna do what I tell you to do or shut the fuck up. You know what I'm saying? Like, that type of thing never felt good to me, and it didn't feel empowering, and it didn't feel right. And, but that was a very common thing that I was seeing on the internet all the time. Someone has a conflict with somebody, they stop talking to them, they start telling everybody else about it, and then they tell them to fucking, like, they better come to me and say this, that, and the other, or don't say shit. Like, and eventually you end up in this situation where it's like, was that healthy for anyone involved? You know, I can see if y'all weren't really, really friends, then, right. But you know, people call this shit friendship, and they do this to people. So
yeah, they do.
Anyway, I'm glad you're reading all those books, man. Those are some dope books. All right, we got email. Sean says, Rod and Karen, I wrote before about getting infected a second time. To clarify the reason, comments about immunity. To clarify, the reason I wrote was because you tend to be better at providing news related to COVID-19 to many news networks in the U.S. And I wanted to clarify about an article you reported on. In that article and some other similar articles, they're referring to cases of relapse in a manner that implied reinfection. However, we are now entering a period where that will be more likely for people who got infected early. Natural immunity lasts about 6 months. That means that people infected in November, January likely no longer have immunity. In some cases, immunity will dissipate faster, so not assuming immunity is a lot safer. Yeah, they just did a study. Well, I will read it on the next one of these things. I just read a study where they were saying some of these antibodies are gone before 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being the case, you know, one, it kind of lowers hope for a vaccine. Two, it kind of makes them be like, we should be concentrating on treatment. Like, how do we get people treated and medicated and out of the hospital faster and cured of this thing, rather than a vaccine that may not be viable if it's only going to last a few months.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, the Oxford vaccine is now in phase 3 wide-scale trials in South Africa and Brazil. An Indian company is already producing it, and the U.S. has already pre-ordered 300 million doses. If successful, distribution could begin as early as September. However, immunity from this vaccine only lasts about a year. That means that annual boosters will be needed. Also, as Fauci pointed out, if there is less than 69% coverage, you will still see COVID-19 spread. Osaka University is working on a DNA vaccine that could be available as early as December. This means rather than injecting a weak form of the virus to elicit an immune response, they inject the DNA for the antigens directly into cells. DNA vaccines have fewer side effects and produce longer immunity, but they are only currently used in veterinary vaccines. The Osaka University SARS-CoV-2 vaccine would be in the first human DNA vaccine. Damn. I hope this information is useful. This is a complex, confusing time, and you are doing such a great job keeping your audience informed that I would like to thank you. Living in Schrodinger's virus countries, y'all in the U.S., myself in Japan, where there's insufficient testing, so everyone is simultaneously infected and not infected, it's quite stressful. Stay safe and keep up the good work. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, baby. Yeah, you be safe over there.
John writes in, good morning, Karen and Rod. Rod, last week you mentioned scenarios where someone would confess to something they actually didn't do when all the pressure of the police and criminal justice system is on top of them. I think it was on the pregame show discussion about Amanda Minox documentary and maybe on the JL Covan episode too. Yeah, it was definitely on the pregame. I remember talking about this because I watched the Amanda Knox documentary on Netflix, and the biggest thing that I didn't know was that her and that dude confessed. I didn't know that. I just always thought they had framed them motherfuckers. First, well, to be honest, when I wasn't paying attention, I just thought they did it. Because, I mean, who the fuck frames white American woman overseas, right, for some sex crime shit? I was like, oh yeah, she must have did that. So then when I looked into it a little bit, I was like, well, maybe she didn't do it, I don't know. But then they were like, oh, she confessed. And I was like, she confessed? Holy shit. Now, we know that you can coerce a confession out of people. She's in a foreign country. Yada, yada, yeah, yada. I'm not saying it's impossible. And then certain people's mentality does not make them good with interrogation and being questioned. And they get nervous and they fuck up and they say something. And that's not what you want to do in police custody, man. But a lot of people do it. They don't have the mentality to be like, because the smart thing is shut the fuck up. You can't talk your way out of this. Wait till you get a lawyer. Let them do the talking. But we've all seen the first 48. We all know people. They say shit to you before you're in custody. They got tricks. They can lie to you about certain things. And people end up, boom, I'm confessing to something, thinking that they compromising or helping get out of trouble. And now you're going to prison forever because you said some shit and it's admissible in the court of law, right? So that's a big part of it. Anyways, I just wanted to add in that in addition to When They See Us, there's also a really amazing Netflix docudrama series called Unbelievable that you should check out. Oh yeah, about the girl who got, yeah, I know this one. It tells the story of a serial rapist in Pacific Northwest who evaded capture for years, but the real focus is on how horribly our system treats victims of sexual assault. It's a really great series that is probably the best commentary and illustration of rape culture that I've ever seen. And it rightfully centers the victim's perspective throughout the feature and features some amazing performances by all the women in the cast. So wait, I thought Unbelievable was a, okay, you said docudrama. So we say performances, do they have acting in it too? Are they like acting out the parts?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
Obviously, serious trigger warnings for sexual violence, misogyny, etc. Though the show does do a fairly good job of making the assaults terrifying without being overly graphic. Oh, so they are acting, reenacting it. Oh, that is a choice. That is a choice. Yeah, I watched Athlete A, if you want to watch another series, and I thought it was a lot less like triggering. It wasn't like trying to get into the graphic sexual nature of the stuff. I also heard they did that with the I'll Be There in the Dark or whatever, or I'll Be Gone in the Dark, the thing about the about the serial killer that they caught using DNA tests and shit. And I heard they do dramatization of the crimes too. I wonder why they do that. Mm-hmm. You know, like someone sexual assault, you think they wouldn't want to do that, but
they wouldn't want to touch that, right? Just let somebody just tell them that it's traumatizing.
Yeah, it's traumatizing enough. Anyway, as a bonus, most of the scenes of the main character biking around Washington were actually filmed on the streets of SoCal. Anyways, just thought you might want to add it to your coronavirus binge watching list, because along with When They See Us, this is probably the most powerful series I saw in 2019. It's something that especially men should watch to help wrap our heads around the world that women have to navigate. P.S. I don't even play video games, but I would gladly buy a gaming system just to play Mortal Karen. That was so hilarious. Stay safe. Love you both, John. Thanks, John. Let's see. Steph G says, hey, y'all, my name is Stephanie, and I wrote to y'all before, LOL. You won't remember, but that's okay. I'm writing in regards to the Nick Cannon situation. Y'all talked about it in the last show, and I have to admit that I was taken by surprise by the whole thing. I don't follow Nick Cannon at all. I only know him from the Drumline and Wildin' Out. When I watched the podcast video and not the 2-minute clip that most people watched, I was disgusted. This hotel shit always sounds nice in the beginning. Black empowerment, this and that. And that's how I think they trick black people. But then it takes a terrible turn. Anti-Semitism, anti-feminism, anti-LGBTQ. They sound much like white supremacists with a sprinkle of black, making up stories about where black people came from and an inception with Egypt. I'm sure it's a wonderful place that I can't even understand. I know there are a lot of isms in our community, colorism, etc., but I never realized that anti-Semitism was one of them. People are posting protect NC at all costs and saying he said nothing wrong. Yeah, man, I am so glad I never see this on my Facebook page. And I'm not bragging, I know that it's happening because my friends be posting shit where they like, and if you niggas defend Nick Cannon,
see it. I'm like,
yeah, I'm like, well, it must be happening somewhere. Just, I don't want to be friends with anyone doing that kind of shit. Mm-mm. Keep it from around me. Like, that's the other part that's weird, when people be like, and it's up to y'all to find, reach the people that are doing this fucked up shit and tell. I'm like, I don't want to do that work. I'm on Facebook to look at baby pictures and memes and comics and shit. I'm not trying to turn my Facebook experience into a fucking classroom, you idiot. What's wrong with y'all? Do the work. Befriend these hotels. No, it's the problem. Like, make them be hotels by themselves. Let it be like six of them niggas and they just only talk to each other.
Right, jab each other crazy.
Giving them a platform. Now you look crazy on my page talking about, you know, posting up these. And if one more of y'all says Nick Cannon is Jesus, I'm like,
I'm like, what's happening over there?
Like, unfriend your uncle. But what he said.
Let your uncle go on Facebook. Be like, no, nigga.
But what he said and his co-host, Griff, mind you, Griff was kicked out of Public Enemy for saying anti-Semitic shit years ago, and as I'm sure you know, was wrong. Are black people so desperate for black empowerment that we're willing to die on this hill, repeating bullshit, conspiracy theories made up by white supremacists and not realizing how stupid and crazy they sound? I know some of us came from royalty, but surely not all of us. I can assure you that it's okay to have an ancestor who was a regular ass person from West Africa. Yeah, yeah, it's insane. I've been reading a ton lately, and I stumbled onto an essay by James Baldwin called Negroes Are Anti-Semitic Because They're Anti-White. Yeah, Randolph was quoting that last time I was on Three Guys On. In the American concept, in the American context, the most ironical thing about Negro anti-Semitism is that the Negro is really condemning the Jew for having become an American white man, for having become, in effect, a Christian. The Jew profits from his status in America, and he must expect Negroes to distrust him for it. The Jew does not realize that the credential he offers, the fact that he has been despised and slaughtered, does not increase the Negro's understanding and increases the Negro's rage. I'm noticing that a lot of people don't want black liberation. They just want to take the place of the white man. Yep. Mm-hmm. They want whatever power they believe white men have. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and I'm sure you'll tell me. I don't think you said anything wrong. Sorry if this is long, but I really needed to talk to someone about this because shit don't make no sense. Thank y'all for reading.
Not a problem, baby.
Yeah, I don't know why you thought we were going to tell you was wrong. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's basically what I believe is, you know, if anything, I'm mad Nick Cannon and Professor Griff and Deshaun Jackson and Steven Jackson got your boy Terry Crews looking like he had a point. He said, be careful of black supremacy and Black Lives Matter don't become Black Lives Better. And God damn it, if in a week if these niggas wasn't out here talking about we better than these Jews and we the real Jews, I'm like, fuck. Just shut up. Everyone take a break. This is in a bad week, man. Kanye, Chance, this is, to live, like, everybody just... I want to blame it on the pandemic.
I do, because these niggas would have been doing some other shit. They'd have been on a plane somewhere in another country. They'd have been signing the deal. They'd have been on somebody's sitcom. They'd have been making somebody's movie, music, television, TV, producing. They'd have been doing some other shit.
Mm-hmm. This is ridiculous. They just sit around all day like, how can I say some fuck shit today?
Yeah, this is what happens when you have too much free time.
Right. The white man was right.
Stop it right now! This is stupid! This is absolutely ridiculous!
Get out of here!
Get out of here! We are adults, and this is ridiculous! Cut the crap!
That's my girl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-mm-mm.
Hello.
let's go to the last one.
Hello to you too. Where that voice come from?
Oh, that's Cam Newton on his Instagram. You haven't seen this clip on the internet?
Is the one you show Ball Deep or different one?
No, nah, the one where he was talking to I don't know if he got like a TV show or Instagram live show he be doing, but he was talking to somebody and they was like, "Hey, you a top five quarterback or something like that?" And they signed the quarterbacks that's older than you and all this shit. And he was like, "Hello." And it was like, he has completely turned into like a black auntie. So you haven't seen this? All right, hold on. I'll show it to you. This is so good. You have to see this. This is why Cam's still my favorite quarterback. Let me see. Where's the full clip? Okay. It's a real short clip. Can you see it? Or it's not showing on your computer yet?
Not yet. It's slow to move. Oh, I see it.
All right.
There's people older than me getting signed.
Especially at your position.
Hello.
Yes, you mean, hello.
People older than me getting signed.
Especially at your position.
Hello.
Yes, he was here about, hello, girl, let me tell you.
He already dressed like a church aunt. He done made the full, complete
yes.
Evolution into church auntie.
Yes, I rolled, Simone, I rolled.
Mm-hmm. Only thing missing was him calling somebody fast or some other reductive ass shit. And these other little fast ass quarterbacks. Mm-hmm.
Out here thinking they slick and shit. Like, I don't see what they doing. Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
That little point he had too with that hello, that was all the sass.
You confirming what I'm talking about.
Oh, I love it. Give me all the sass. Put it right in my veins.
Come on.
Hello.
So yeah, Nerd Geek Ninja writes in, "Hey y'all, Rod and Karen, the way I hollered and laughed when Rod read that email that said, don't read it. Oh my God, I was dying and crying and rolling because it is something I totally would have done. I sincerely hope you don't dwell on it, Rod. It was an honest mistake. Why would they put that at the end? Oh Lord, I hope that family doesn't listen to the show. Oh no." Yeah, she messed me up by putting that at the end. You gotta put it in
the beginning,
the title or the very start of the email. Yes. I don't read, obviously we get too much feedback. This is what takes 2 hours to do the show.
Yeah, we don't pre-read it.
Yeah. On another note, Rod didn't bring your prison abolitionist propaganda to Waffles. Syrup needs to be in prison of fluffy goodness while I make them my daughter and I sing the Waffle song from Teen Titans Go. Waffles, waffles, waffles.
Yes.
Waffles. Folks saying you had to add more syrup because waffles absorb it. No, you don't. The waffle absorbs the syrup, and now you have a fluffy sweet treat. That's not true. It does absorb more syrup. Plus, are y'all children? You need to see your syrup to know it's there. Yes, some of us do. Look, like my man Joe from the old guard said, you're infantile, and you'll never understand a love like this. I'm paraphrasing.
I guess I won't, baby.
But you get the point. Speaking of the old guard, will y'all be reviewing it? Yes, we will. If not, I understand the old guard and Lovebirds were two movies I was looking forward to y'all review. Oh, I still haven't seen Lovebirds.
Mm-mm.
Man, this pandemic done fucked up. I missed the Thursday night movie outing.
Yeah, cause that literally, like, that was our thing. I mean, like I said, we guess get back on it, but it's really hard when you used to just the custom of going out. Cause that was just about our thing, going out. Catching the early afternoon matinee, then grabbing something to eat, and then coming home and reviewing the movie.
Yeah, and the thing is, without the tradition of it, it's weird because there's no day that we can like set aside to do it. And then with Karen working from home and stuff, it's not even like you're home, let's go watch it. Like, you know, we mostly just try to stay out of each other's way. So it's like, mm-hmm. Oh, you playing video games? Don't worry about it.
Right.
Oh, you're already watching Warrior Nun? Go ahead and binge that.
Yeah, I'm rewatching Agent of Shield. Yeah.
Anyway, we'll try to get on it because Karen did actually take some time out to watch The Old Guard.
Mm-hmm, that was really good because after you and Justin talked about it, I said, you know what? I think I want to do it because I know it's like number one, number two on Netflix. So
yeah, I definitely will review it soon.
Mm-hmm.
And also we might either take the week off or take a couple of days off this week. I don't know which one yet, but you know, just want to make sure we don't get burned out. Also, I tried to leave a voicemail, but I think the system is down. It wouldn't let me leave one. Not sure if anyone else is having this issue. Kim Doc did a week ago, but as you can hear, we had several voicemails this week. So
yep.
It might just be, you got to pay your bill. You know, I know, you know, some of y'all on that, Verizon Wireless, and it's just not working out. Love y'all. Stay safe out there, Amon. Thanks, Amon.
Thank you.
And the last one's from Kim Doc, who said, skip the last couple paragraphs. Okay. Hey, Karen, my love. Hey, Rod.
Hey, baby.
Wow. The disrespect.
Yeah.
Hope y'all have been enjoying the week. It's been rough and hard to wrap my head around certain things, so I've been focusing my energy on acquiring and honing skills I never seem to have time and patience for. Things like my home plants. I hate that it's trendy now, lol. I have a plant addiction, but my picker is off. You have to beware of bringing home plants that were sick at the nursery or store at the store at the point of purchase. A couple succulents have bit the dust. Yeah, I had a plot that had three succulents in it, and like two of the succulents is dead, but one is holding on for dear life.
Yes, it is.
It's growing. That's the succulent that can do it. Okay, I don't know what's the mother two succulents. They bit the dust. Okay, I know y'all are into yoga. Before COVID, I started this workout class that incorporates drumsticks and Pilates movement. It's a lot of squats and dips to increase your range of motion. Purchased some funky drumsticks on my own. Found some routines on YouTube. I wish Black Workout Warriors were into this so I could get a trap vibe going. One Direction is cool, but them niggas don't get your cardio up like some City Girl scammer music.
Yes, and you know, and that's one thing that I do miss about going to yoga, because my yoga teacher played Black ass music, and one thing about was it like Zumba, it's not all jokes aside, it's very hard to find a Zumba class, particularly like the YMCA. I don't know if it's just the YMCA or maybe the teachers I have that actually play Black ass music. You can get a lot of Mexican and Latino music, which is fine, and you can get a lot of like that cardio, you know, smooth jazz white music. But sometimes you want to hit in there, you want to, oh, this is some Rihanna, like you want to hear something else other than that, and it's very, very hard. That, like, they were like, we're gonna pick the cleanest, maybe because it's wild, we're gonna pick the cleanest shit up. You're like, okay, I guess.
Yeah, and I think, you know, picking up new habits and stuff in this is kind of the way it's got to go, because we got to replace things, and it's hard to replace it with just sitting around. So you know, you can't go out to eat, you can't go to the movies, whatever else things you like to do. So yeah, if it's plants, if it's reading, if it's comic books, video games, whatever, just to keep your mind distracted until, you know, we get to a point where maybe hopefully one day we can go outside again.
Right.
You just got to do what you got to do, man. So I don't blame you. And especially with half this country just being, not even half, it's at least less than half, it's like 20-30% of people that just actively are like, I want to fuck coronavirus, I want it in my body right now, pour it in my veins. With them being out there, I'm just comfortable having to be like, well, I guess it's me and these plants, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not doing it. All right. Recipes to Representative John Lewis. The sacrifices these civil rights leaders have made just to see Obama, my goodness, I get chills thinking about how glorious that must have been for them. But then the country is headed towards racism once again. I will say this, I'm confident that these evil Republicans will not be remembered the way our leaders are. I thought about this the other day. You realize we are actually living in a time where the monuments, the buildings, and the statues that will be built for these Republicans will be torn down one day. Like, that's the legacy they're leaving behind. The same, you know, and I don't know how long it'll take or whatever, but like, if anyone ever tries to put some Mitch McConnell shit up, it's coming down.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
No.
If you try to name something after Trump, people are going to be like, no, don't put his name on a fucking school.
Yes, we don't want his name on a goddamn thing.
Yeah, so it's going to be a fight. They made it that way. They made it that way. And I'm sure that's yet another thing that eats their craw. Thanks for the week of great episodes with amazing guests. Bossy is a treasure, and I wanted to be more like Zaria as a kid. Blessings and laughter, Kim Doc. Thanks, Kim Doc.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for today. I don't think there's anything else except these gifts we got in the mail.
We were shocked and surprised. For those of you that we actually got an Amazon wish list, if you choose to. And if you want to send us something, be it a card or anything like that, you want to find our address, go on to blackguywhotips.com and look under About Us.
Yeah, the blackguywhotips.com/about is
where
you can find
us. My bad.
It's okay. I'm sorry. I'm cleaning it up. Where we can, where you can find the mailing address and stuff if you want to mail us some, a gift or whatever.
We
literally did not expect this.
Mm-mm, I was shocked.
But we went to the mailbox and we had like three different things.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one, comes with these, and these came with cards and stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm reading this right. I think it's Sonic. Is what I believe it says. If not, then maybe Bonnie. But it says, "Hi, Karen.
Hey, baby.
These cotton, was it bolts of fabric, are for head wraps, scarves, and wrap skirts. Stay cool and enjoy." And I think it says Sonic. so look at all these beautiful fabrics that I guess Karen can make into some fashions up in here.
Oh, I will be.
Or I'll get my mom the sewing machine or something.
Yeah, y'all be having me looking fly. You know, I'm not gonna lie. Shout out to black women. Be like, I'm not gonna have Karen out here looking crazy. Cause y'all, over the years, I got earrings I still wear. I got makeup I still wear. Lip gloss I still wear. You know, I slowly go through some of the stuff that y'all gave me, and I want to tell everybody thank you for thinking about me and want me to look nice.
Then we got this package. It came with a card. I always like to read the card first.
Mm-hmm. Just some more cards to put in my card list up there.
All right, this one came with a couple of pages. "Dear Rod and Karen, thank you for being who you are and for doing the life-changing work that you do." Wow, life-changing.
I know, right?
"I'm personally grateful for your diligence and authenticity. After several years of being a fan, I've had the opportunity to log in and listen live in the chat. The TBGWT community are a ton of fun. I'm not kidding when I say you guys have gotten me through COVID, Black Rage, and now COVID squared. I live in NYC and I'm gearing up to return to work. I did not want to get bossy again and miss the opportunity to say busy again and miss the opportunity to say thank you. You are both treasures and deserve to be celebrated. I'm including a bottle of my favorite champagne. Here's to you, Sonya." So that must have been who the rats was from. Sonya. Mm-hmm. I said Sonic, like the Hedgehog. I was like, well, Sonic the Hedgehog, listen to this. I'm a big fan. I have all your games.
Right?
But
thank you, baby.
This is what Sonya gave us with the card. Is this it sounds Krug. Either that or Krug. You know, we not fancy. Mm-hmm. But it's champagne. Okay, we got some champagne up in here. Some Krug Grand Cuvée Brut. Okay,
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know, but I know what champagne means, and it will get drank. Okay, I know that much. Damn, this champagne come with some type of certificate inside.
Ooh, was it a limited edition?
Like, shit come with instructions?
They're gonna be like, you got one out of 30 bottles ever made?
Oh, this shit is in French? Oh, wait, hold on. It's some English. What's this gonna be like? Don't open. It could cause epilepsy if you watch the game too close. Let's see. "All of our anecdotes and stories influence our culture, stirring the senses and the heart. In the end, they carry us to where we want to go, to what we want to create, a handcrafted, exquisite champagne that leaves no one indifferent. From Olivier Krug, sixth generation of the Krug family. Krug Grand Cuvée, the most generous champagne in the world with exceptional finesse. You have just opened a cake." Damn. This is gonna give me instructions. "You need to kill the president." This will self-destruct. "You have just opened the case containing a bottle of Krug Grand Cuvée. This creation is at the heart of the House of Krug, at the very epitome of its handcrafted excellence. As you taste it, notes of toasted bread, hazelnut, nougat, barley sugar, citrus, and jellied fruits may take you by surprise. You may even taste hints of apple still on the tree, flowers in bloom, ripe and dried fruit, almonds, marzipan.
I don't even know what half that shit is.
Gingerbread, sweet spices, and even brioche and honey. Krug Grand Cuvée is the first prestige cuvée. So a cuvée is a thing. Okay. To be recreated every year beyond the very notion of vintage. an extraordinary blend of over 120 wines from 10 different vintages, some of which may reach 15 years of age. Blending so many vintages give Cru Grand Cuvée its unique fullness of flavors and aromas. An extraordinary generosity with Cru Grand Cuvée lends itself to a plethora, with exceptional finesse, the results of a stay of at least another 6 years in the cellars. Wow, this is a experience. Cru Grand Cuvée lends itself to a plethora of culinary combinations, from the simplest to the most sophisticated, from extra mature Parmesan to a dish of Tobolala Truffle.
Oh shit, am I gonna put my pinky up when I drink this?
I'm saving this for a special occasion.
Right, this is gonna be a special. I don't even know. Yeah,
I don't think I can just drink this on like a Saturday in the house.
We're gonna have to save it for something real special, baby. I don't even know, but it just sounds fancy.
Yeah, I'm gonna put this back up. It's never removed from box. I feel like
you better put the plastic back on that.
Let me gently place this on the ground. And then we had one more thing too. Oh, we had two more things. Right?
Yes. Okay. All
right, so the card comes with the flowers, right?
Yes.
All right, so then we got these decorative flowers. Now look, thank you. Finally, a plant that can't be killed.
Yeah, I think it's handmade too.
Yeah, because Karen and I have killed several real plants.
Yes. We thank you, baby. This is going to live forever.
So this is like a plant. Look how beautiful this is. These colors, the rainbow, the butterfly. Yes. It's got these little like things that weigh it down that look like marbles.
Yes, y'all, I'm gonna say this again. I know I said this before. Y'all niggas are talented. Very, very, very talented. And you're sitting in your house, honey, tap into that talent. Don't let the COVID dry your bank account up. Go out there and use y'all talents.
All right, let's see. This is from Rebecca. Dear Rod and Karen, I hope you both like the arrangement. I made this for you guys to. Wow, you made this yourself.
And that's what I said, and it's gorgeous, baby.
To celebrate your 10th anniversary, and also as a thank you for your Reading Rainbow segment. I started this in January, and I just finished it this weekend. Wow. She worked on this till July 12th.
Wow.
This is. Thank you,
baby. And it's beautiful, because I was like, oh, Roger, this is gorgeous.
I really love your show, and I wanted to make you something that reflected that. You highlight so many causes and speak your hearts. It's refreshing, and I can't thank you enough for what you two do. Happy anniversary, and I look forward to what the next decade can bring you. Sincerely, Rebecca M. Thank you. Aww. Oh, wait, she wrote something on the back. Directions for care. Compressed air works best for removing dust. Wet cloth can be used as well. Petals and leaves can be gently molded back into place. The technique is called French beaded flowers. Beads and wire constructed into flowers. Easy care and lasts forever. Thank you.
I will replace
the succulents I've killed with this, okay?
Yes, it's gorgeous. It even have a little butterfly on it. It's so pretty, and it's bright and got so many colors on it, baby. You made my types of plants.
Man, this is so random that y'all decided to send us all this shit.
Right?
I definitely don't think anything happened. I guess the 10-year anniversary. I guess that must have been it. I don't know. I don't know. Why people, it's like we went to the mailbox on a random Wednesday and they was like, oh, y'all got a lot of shit. We was like, for what?
What happened?
It's not Christmas.
Mm-mm.
Like, is it Juneteenth? So this one, okay, so is this card? Okay, this is the card. First of all, check out this card. Like this black woman, your excellence is necessary. Y'all see this? Can they see this?
Yep, y'all be coming with the mahogany cards.
It's from DorcasCreates.com. So inside it says, Dear Rod and Karen, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you both through the Rona times, and through the ongoing fuck shit of racism, capitalism, and the complexities of the social media frenzy in which we are all trying to process, heal and change. Your voices are full of sense and truth and humanity and comfort. And I just want you to know that how much I learned from you, from listening to your amazing, peerless podcast of dreams. Oh, Amazing Peerless Podcaster Dreams. I like it. Put it on t-shirt.
I know, right? We fancy.
Shout out to the three black-owned businesses and three amazing artists whose vision is in this package. Dorcas Creates, Dorcas Magbadello, PTO, made this card. The two in the package are from at Eclectic Gift, which is Nicola McGuire, and The Amazing Book, which I feel speaks to the soul of episode 1559, The Black Woman Shared Universe, or of the Black Guy Who Tips podcast, is by at Wild Sugar, S-U-G-A, which is Serena Leah, I think this says Serena Mantle, maybe. And then Serena also makes music as Serena Leah. Okay, cool, man, look at this. All right, yes. So then, oh wait, and there's another note in here too. Apologies for my awful writing. I'm no one's writing's worse than mine. My awful writing, sentence grammar failures. I hope y'all feel the love that between the days and these very traumatic times. You are both getting time to rest to pumpkin spice latte and live your best lives. Of course, thank you so much. I just love what you do so much. Lots of love from the UK, Felix. Thank you, Felix.
Thank you.
So the card was badass. Oh my goodness, what is this, like a print? It's like a card of our own, because if it is, yeah, it's never getting sent out.
It's just not
ours now.
Yeah.
But I think this is like a card of our own. This is some badass black art. Let me open this thing so y'all can see what I'm talking about.
It ain't been sent nowhere. That's going to be forever here.
Yeah, because it comes with an envelope, because I think you're supposed to mail it.
Oh, babe, we ain't mailing this to nobody.
Yeah, this is ours.
This ain't being mailed to nobody.
Look at this.
A woman in a head wrap.
Wow. And then it got this one with the sister with the fro. Can y'all see it?
Yes.
Like
the one with the fro is beautiful.
Look how big that damn fro is. Oh my god. And then the last one is Serena Mantle, who said Women and Patterns and Plants, a self-care coloring book. First of all, look at this cover. Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, all this blackness.
And Roger going through therapy, he got him some color pencils, so I guess I'll be coloring beside you now.
Yeah, you definitely welcome to color with me. Yeah, I mean coloring is very relaxing.
It is.
She weaves soft strong bones in wild moonlight roars mystic songs, her home the forest. And then they, I guess, like, so on one side you got the stain, and then on the other one you got the picture to color in.
Oh
man, this is dope. The power of intention. What five things are you wishing to manifest into your life? And then you write that on one side and you color on the other side. Man, aww, y'all really, y'all some thoughtful motherfuckers.
Y'all be finding the blackity black as shit. I'm like, I didn't even know this existed. I was like, is it mahogany? I don't know. That's what we call it in the States.
And, you know, I want to, first of all, thank y'all for, you know, because we didn't ask for anything, but mm-hmm, we appreciate y'all doing that. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, I want to thank y'all. But then secondly, I gotta condemn all this, because this ain't nothing but black capitalism. You can't fool me, player. You think I didn't see what you just did? You spent money to give to these blacks so that they can capitalize off of having some money in these COVID times, and you know I'm not with that bullshit.
Don't y'all pay, you not this slick, man, no attention.
Okay, Beyonce and the NAACP tried to combine to give black people, black small businesses some loans. And you know what I did? I applied for one and I got approved. And then I turned it down. I said, I don't want your fucking capitalist sweat, kidnapping money. Okay. You're not going to get me, baby. I'm too woke. I'd rather be on these streets and keep my purity and let all you people with money that's black feel compromised. Well, I'm just morally pure, laying in the middle of the street, homeless, but at least I have my integrity, Felix. Nice try. Anyway, we'll talk to the rest of y'all later. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to y'all
Thank
later.
Thank you, everybody.
Until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.